Recording, cool. Let me just make sure. Hang on, I'm just going to...
Maybe say the date, because the date is a number as well, isn't it?
Of the Retro Asylum. Thanks, Chris.
What episode is it?
This is episode number one, gazillion, I'm sure. Something along those lines, at least. So, hello, dear listeners, and welcome. This is Mass speaking, and today I am recording with Chris, as you already heard. But I've got the OG Chris here as well. So, Mr. O'Regan.
Hello. Yes, so, I know. It's just suddenly gone back in time, 2 years or so. Hello. I am now back on a Retro Asylum. When was the last time I was on? A year ago. I was on a year ago.
Yeah, you were. You were on the Christmas episode.
I was. Yeah. Mm. That was the eventful one as opposed to, this will do.
And that's, exactly.
I'm not sure which one was better, actually. I think they both have merit. Mm. I thought, the rambling sort of stuff. episode was great, so well done.
Oh, thanks.
But do you know how many episodes it's been, Chris, since you were last on Retro Asylum?
No, we do not.
Neither do I.
I didn't look. If I responded, that would be like there'd be a pause, like okay. Anyway, no, I do not. Sorry,
it's been more than 3 years. More than 3 years.
Yeah.
No, but we're glad to have you back. And
thank you.
You're here to help us today because we are recording a Game Club episode and it's one of our voting episodes. We need to pick out our candidates for this month's theme, which will be in television games. And both, new Chris and I don't know enough about the Intellivision at all, but you know it a lot, I know.
Yes, I do. It's the first console I owned back in 1981. And I got it more or less at the same time as my ZX81, so it's kind of split between those two, computing sort of one a computer. Well, is it a computer 81? Oh, shots fired!
Here we go. We're going. We're rolling now, people.
It is. Well, one of the things we're going to be saying a lot. Well, at least I'm going to be saying a lot on this show, is that this game is a bit like this, only it appeared 20 years earlier.
Mm.
It happens a lot with the Intellivision.
Yeah.
Way ahead of its time, to its fault. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It did things that, you shouldn't know how to do that yet. Well, we do now. But mainly because they didn't know what they were doing. They're just making it up as they went along. But that's really the key with the Intellivision. I'm not going to bang the drum about the controller. Yes, the controller's weird. And it's definitely, many people call it a Marmite, but it doesn't really work with the international audience, no offense, lads.
Mm.
But especially Americans, because that means that you either hate it or really hate it.
Yeah.
Because that's how you treat Marmite. But really, it's, I donand't think it's that. It's just really understand. I personally think it's better than the ColecoVision one. Because it's too stiff. That joystick's too stiff on the television. Mm. But anyway,
well, it's better than the pillbox, though, isn't it? I mean, if you compare it directly with the VCS, I mean, the monstrosity of a controller that thing shipped with.
indeed, and it does 16 directions. It's a special place in my heart for the machine. I still own one, actually two. The other one's sort of like parts. Spares and when things break down, I've got all my consoles now. I actually did a tweet earlier on this month at the time of recording where I did I've got my second generation consoles, Hey, which is the, of course, the 2600 Intellivision, ColecoVision, and the Odyssey 2 stroke G7000.
So, you've got one of those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Wowza. You don't see many of those out in the wild.
No, and it still works. And I did an AV mod on it over Christmas. So
yeah.
And now all of them now have AV mods, so I don't need a video recorder to tune in the RF and then do the AV.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's the video recorder's now gone into the shed. Bye.
Do you have a TRS-80, Chris?
No. No.
Shocker. Why would I have one?
No, the closest I've got is the Tandy TR-994A.
Yeah.
Texas Instruments, not Tandy, Texas Instruments. I kind of align those machines with that machine, but no, I'm not really drawn to that particular. I'm not sure if it ever was released in the UK.
It was not in great numbers, but it definitely was released.
Yeah.
I mean, I was eyeing one up. There was one for sale pretty close to you and me, Chris. In fact, about halfway between us where we are in Southeast England. That was £385 with the memory expansion module.
Yet and more I reason thought, why I'm not really.
I thought, just no, I can't.
I've genuinely stopped hardware collecting. The only thing I'm doing now, which is fairly typical for people like myself and most of the RetroSign audience that have been at it for the past 15, 20 years or so, is most of our collections have stabilized to the point where we may have actually started selling stuff off. Speaking for Mads here, I think Mads might start selling things off. And now what I'm calling in the tinkering phase.
Mm.
This is where you go, well, what if I did that to that? What if I did this to that? And that's where that's coming from. So, for example, I've got an A500 with a Pi-Storm in it, and that's not really a 500 anymore. I don't know what it is now. It's basically, I think there must be Pi's doing all the heavy lifting now on it. And that's fine. That's fine. But, yeah, doing weird and wonderful things with machines, yet still maintaining their original integrity to a point. It's been really fun for me. I've got a lot of SD card solutions for my platform, an SD card solution for my CBS ColecoVision. So every game ever released is now on one cart.
Yeah. Just
pop it in. Jobs are good. It's awesome. I have an Atari 130 XE, but it's got 1 megabyte of RAM.
Ooh.
Wow.
And it's got DVI out. And it's got cartridge. I really don't want to talk about it. It's scary, but yeah, it's not an 8, but it is an 8-bit. Still runs the same processor and stuff, but it's really massively souped up Atari 8-bit machine.
So you can fit a lot of the Atari 8-bit library in RAM at any one time.
Yeah. Yes.
Just because. Why not?
The thing is, the one thing that drove me is I got a cartridge and I thought, well, this could run anything. And then it says, oh, no, you need like more RAM. It's got 128K. What more do you need? Apparently, there's lots of games out there on the Atari 8-bits that need more RAM to run. Homebrew stuff, yeah. So it's a bit like a C64 and a ridiculous sort of like Sonic version just come out. You know, people going, oh, I'd like a 256K expansion for my C64. Yes, you would like one of those, wouldn't you? It's nice, isn't it? Now it's time to find one. That'll be £20,000.
Yeah, call Game. See if they stock them.
Probably not. So, yeah, but apparently it does work on a C64 Mini and Max. So if you've got one of those, you're laughing.
But presumably you could soup up your OG C64 to be able to run the likes of Sonic. And there's been a couple actually of C64 games released recently which do require various soup ups. But presumably these things are out there in the wild which you could get.
There is the a cartridge expansion like Ultimate 64 and stuff that does add memory. But you can't do it within in the innards of the C64.
Okay, right. So it doesn't just plug in.
Yeah, you can't. You need to plug it into the cartridge slot, as far as I understand. The only things you can do inside is modify the VIC chip and replace the PLA and all these things trying to actually and people try to make replacement SID chips, but it's not an impossible.
Yeah,
because you don't get the same sound. I mean, people still argue over C64C versus Breadbin. There is an argument for the bread bin, I grant you, but I kind of like the visuals of the of the sea. So,
yeah.
No, but I heard the Ultimate 64 is impossible to get a hold of these days anyway.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But you can play the new Sonic game on the Mister, I know, because Dean, Matt, and Steve have been doing that.
You have to make sure your settings are quite precise with it, but yes.
Yes.
There's very specific settings you have to do in order to get it to work. He says, as a man, as he still doesn't have a Mister.
You need a Mister and you need a PSU as well. And I got a PSU, Chris.
Yeah, you got a PSU. Yeah. I've got a multi-system, but I don't have the necessary thing because it's gone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist anymore. It won't be for another 6-7 months, I think.
I'm suffering horrendous peer pressure, by the way, from my fellow Retro Asylum host, because now, as Steve Erickson actually pointed out in our chat earlier, when he very pointedly said, Mads, you are now a member of the club.
You're not, Chris.
Oh,
I'm not, no.
The clique. Oh, it's like Children of the Corn, isn't it? Join us.
I would say 90% of the chat now that goes on in our chat room is Mr. Related. Would you say, Mads?
Yeah, even if it sounds about right.
But it's normally people telling off Matt who complains about something on the Mister. that's forbidden. You mustn't.
Wow.
It's the Church of the Mister over
it's
here.
It's gone beyond cult now, isn't it?
Yes,
really?
Yes.
Come on. He had the temerity yesterday to say that the background screen was a little loud, perhaps, in terms of its colours and its design.
You can change that, you silly sausage.
Yes.
Everything. You can change everything about it. You can make it look like a banana if you want.
Mm-hmm. Dean just dropped a pallet of bricks on him from a great height and shut him right down.
Absurd. Absurd. And, of course, bringing it right back into plot, you know, like as I like to do. So I'm sure listeners missed this about me. You can also emulate the Intellivision on this.
You can. Hey. Indeed. Yeah. I did that today, playing my candidates for this month. Great games.
And they are just extraordinary games. But anyway.
So what controller were you using, Mads, just generally just to emulate these games?
So I needed to use both the keyboard and my. I'm using an 8-bit do the SFC 30 controller.
Yeah, it's a fabulous controller.
Yeah,
really
I like
good.
That. I like that.
I use that with my Fire Stick when I'm playing. And stream. So, yeah.
Because that is something that we were worried about when Mads and I first floated this idea between us about doing an Intellivision themed. First thing that we said to each other was, what about that controller? Now, I made a mistake on our last episode because I said it's an analog controller. It's not, as far as I'm aware,
controller. It is, but it has a ridiculous membrane. You think Amiga membrane keyboards are bad? Nothing compared to these. I have four pairs of controllers, spares.
Do you?
Because I know what they do because it happened to me when I was a kid.
Yeah,
they broke down.
Yeah, they just stuff. I remember
just,
that.
They
when
just
I was
wear
a kid
away.
As well.
They wear away. It's awful.
Yeah,
and it's just a bad design. So I've just got. I mean, you can buy replacements now, thank heavens. But I've just got loads of spare controllers now.
The one thing that could make emulation interesting is the fact that it is a 16-way, 16-direction disc.
I spoke to the Evercade people about this at Blackpool and. In Play Expo Blackpool, which was an intro experience, which we have to discuss for another podcast. I sort of asked them bluntly, I said, were you making it in a television collection? How are you doing that controller? I said, with great difficulty.
Yeah, that's what they said to us as well. Yeah.
You know, and I was playing it most of today because I've done lots of traveling this morning.
Yeah.
Because I did my annual. My pilgrimage to Leisure Games.
Happy birthday, by the way, again.
Thank you. I'm recording this on my birthday, everyone. See, I'm dedicated to the cause, the same. And I was playing the Intellivision collection on the Evercade on the way there, and I did a really, really good job.
Yeah,
with the limited, you know, and I have an extraordinary system where there's a little number pad on the Intellivision controller. That's the real, that's the other kicker. The disc thing, that's relatively easy dealt with a thumb pad. You could easily, so that's fine. But how do you do with a number pad? Mm-hmm. And as Mads said, you have to use the keyboard at the same time to press the numbers in. Whereas what they've done on Evercade, it's quite ingenious, is that you press the shoulder buttons, one of the shoulder buttons, and a little sort of virtual keyboard appears on the screen.
Oh, interesting.
And then you select the relevant entry. It's not particularly fast. And it works on some more of the arcadey games, but not the games that we're going to be talking about today.
No. interesting. Now, I've got the cart, and I think what they said when I interviewed the guys was they were very careful about game selection, which I suppose you would need to be. What's more interesting, I think, and I've not got the PS2 compilation that was released in 2000 and whenever, but that has 60 games on it. Now, I imagine there were some compromises there because 60 games is almost half of the total commercial games released for the Intellivision. So they must have found either ways around it or probably more likely compromised on some of the methods of control, perhaps.
Mm. I can't honestly remember how they overcame it. I mean,
no.
Because I do have an Intellivision, sounds really elitist, so sorry, everyone.
Why
because
would
I do
you?
Have one, I generally play on it. Yeah. Why would I use an emulator when I've actually got one? So yeah. I just use that. And there's other reasons why, which we'll talk about later on the show.
Yeah.
But I can't honestly answer that question with any authority. No. I can only talk about actually using the hardware itself, but not an emulation. It's too long ago now.
And just before we move on to presenting our long list, the beauty of, I mean, the Intellivision was also the first video game system I ever had. My brothers, older brothers got one. I think I remember it. So it must have been Christmas 1984, perhaps. And so, yeah, so it has very, very fond nostalgic memories for me. In fact, one of my games is the first video game I ever remember playing, which is it's going to be pretty cool for me if that makes the list. But the great thing about collecting Intellivision now, and I picked one up last month, is that the games are actually affordable. I mean, if you look on eBay, most of the games are actually, compared to other systems, they go 20, 30, 40 quid, which is a lot of money for a retro game, but it's not 150 quid or 200 quid, it is affordable. So that is seen, you know, for those, and there are relatively few games released for the system as well. So people who are looking to go down that rabbit hole of collecting, maybe the Intellivision's not a bad place to start.
And is there a flash card solution or SD card solution as well?
Yes,
there is, but...
Sorry, Chris, yeah, you go.
It is very difficult to get hold of.
Okay.
Because the guy, it appears there's one guy in the whole world who makes them, and he makes them in batches to order.
Yeah, and you just to put your name on a list, because I've put my name on it. I mean, I've got a lot of them. Again, I'm not being elitist or boasting, just a fact, I've got a lot of them. And... it's so, you know, I'm not hankering for this thing, but it'd be awesome to have it because to have all of those on one cart, and it's just like I have on the Vectrex, you know, I've got the Pytrex, which is the, you know, the Raspberry Pi powered cartridge that turns the Vectrex into I don't know what.
Something,
I know Mr. Dean, he's got one too, and but just to have that put into a machine, it's really, really convenient and lovely to have that. You also, what's really exciting is you have access to the homebrew stuff.
Yeah,
just like when I got the one for the Jaguar, which is similarly hard to find. The SD card reader for the Jaguar is not an impossible to find. It comes out in spurts.
Okay.
Not easy to find, and I suspect if you ever find one on the secondhand market, it will be super expensive.
Yes. Yes.
Then it's good that the games aren't that expensive.
No, quite. No. And it is emulatable. Controller issues aside.
Yeah, there's lots of different solutions, but like I said, I can't remember them. I'm no good for that. I'm not being elitist. It's just I have them. I have one, or more than one. One and a half. So, yeah.
Yeah, but for our listeners, whichever game ends up winning this, we will figure out how to emulate it, probably how to map controllers. I'll play it on my Mister and make a configuration for that, because you can remap buttons so that normally you don't need all, I guess, in the game, need all the numbers on the numeric keyboard. So you can probably map that to a couple of buttons and then be good to go.
Yeah. I suspect so.
Mm.
Yeah,
yeah. You have to be. I've been trying to be very careful with that. In fact, one game I definitely didn't want to offer up for a reason we'll talk about later.
There was a game that I skipped as well because it turned out that you had to press both 2 and 3 at the same time to shoot, for example. So I'm guessing some of the overlays would have you press multiple buttons.
Yes, yes.
That would be fun.
Yeah. So the Intellivision had these little overlays
they do.
On the controller, which I love that, actually. Love that little detail.
Yeah. Chris is holding up one for...
I'm showing them now. So anyway.
Yeah. Shall we now?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Yeah. Shall we reveal our games?
Chris, we're going to take turns in revealing one game. And then when we're done revealing all of the games and telling our dear listeners why we would like them to choose this game, we will whittle down the list by, again, taking turns in picking off one of the games from each other's lists.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, that makes sense, I believe.
Wonderful. I think you should start then, Chris, because you are our guest today.
So I'll start strong. I'm going to start like my favourite at the moment rather than... So I'm going to start strong. My first one is Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Cloudy Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the first adventure games I played on computer or video game system ever. I believe it was released in 1982. Might be wrong. I think it's 82. And it is... I'm going to describe it to you now, and you go, no, surely not. It's a procedurally generated dungeon crawl adventure with varying difficulty levels. Fog of War, which is a term I hope most listeners understand.
Yeah.
And directional sound.
Yeah, amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
In 81.
Yeah, incredible.
That sounds crazy.
Mm. It's just like, it's beyond anything I've ever encountered before. And to this day, that's not true. It did appear in 1997. Thanks, Diablo. And the point being is that it's way ahead of its time. It's the thing about this, the console is way ahead of its time. And it had dual combat, dual method of, so you had moving, where you're moving through the dungeon, top-down view. As you move through the dungeon, it's this sort of like green background with yellow passageways.
Mm.
And these passageways would have various things in them. There would be ornaments, monsters. And monsters, typically you'd hear them before you saw them.
Yeah, amazing.
And it's terrifying. The dragons were utterly terrifying.
Yeah.
It would echo through the chambers. It's just stunning. Again, I'm going to repeat, 1982, right? And what was also is I've got one of these, I mean, it's bad for podcasting, but I'm going to hold up the little, so it's got the sort of arrows on the overlay. This, you put these little overlays into the keypads. And by the way, there's a technique to those we'll talk about later. And basically, it's a dual stick shooter in that you move with your disc and then you use the overlay to shoot the arrows with.
That's brilliant. That's amazing. Nice. I mean, you couldn't do that on any other system at the time.
No.
It was years before you could do that on a console.
And then there's also other things, like you could hurt yourself because you'd shoot an arrow and it bounced off the wall and hit you.
Mm.
So, yeah, you'd hurt your self-harm.
Yeah.
Never, you know, it doesn't really happen. And also, one lovely little bit, and I love this part, was to count how many arrows you had, because you had limited ammunition of arrows.
Mm.
It wasn't infinite, it's limited. So you had this resource you had to manage. 1982.
Yeah.
And the way to find out is you click this little button at the bottom of the overlay, so it's arrow count, and a series of clicks would emit. Mm. And you had to count the clicks.
Ah. Very clever.
Okay, I've got six, I think.
Want to miscount.
And there was like monsters would mess with the sound, like bats would appear. They're constantly flapping. They wouldn't harm you, but you could only hear them. So you're deafened by the bats flapping. So, and your main sense in this game, because your visual, you know, because it's always so dark because of the fog of war, you only know there's a snake or a dragon or a demon nearby. It's because of the sound they're making.
Yeah.
So fascinating stuff. That's my first tip in there is Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, Cloudy Mountain. I could go on and on. There's multiple difficulty settings. There's like the strategies and tactics to get to Cloudy Mountain. And the point is you're trying to get the two pieces of the crown together, and then you get the key, and then you it's just amazing. It's just so good.
Chris, so this is the game that was subtitled Cloudy Mountain, right?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I came across that too when I was looking for my games as well.
Yeah, yeah. Magnificent game. Still play it to this day.
Yeah. Sounds good. Great first choice.
Yeah, great choice.
So, Chris, version two.
Shall I go first? Right, let me think about this now, because I've got my three games. Let me get this one out of the way then. So, I've chosen one of the sequels to that game. That game got two Intellivision sequels. I've gone for, and they were all reasonably different from what I've read. I've not played any of them. I said, had an Intellivision way back in the day. This would not have been one of the games that my brothers would have bought. But when I was looking through from my games, there's one game that has very sentimental nostalgia value to me, and I'll save that one till last. But the other two games were games which I thought I would like to play today. And this was one of them. It was released in 1987. Man, they were still releasing commercial games for this system. I think the last one was released in 1989. So it was supported way after the Intellivision was a going concern.
So this is the third one they did, is it?
This is the third one. And I can't remember the name of the second one. But the reason I've chosen this one is from my research and what I've read, it was a bit of a culmination of what they'd done with the earlier two games.
Right.
So, again, it doesn't have Advanced Dungeons & Dragons in the title. Presumably, the license had expired and they couldn't obtain it this late in the system's commercial life. But it's very much inspired by D&D. 10 different character classes, each with their own strengths. You can play. There's not just one quest. 7 different quests featuring procedurally generated maps. So similar in that respect, and they're different difficulties. So each 7 has grades of difficulty. I think they're all open from the start, so there's no progression, but you can obviously self-regulate how you progress through the game. There's an objective for each one of those quests that you can go on, and there are different ways in which to fulfill that quest. So let's say your quest might be to obtain a chalice. You can either obtain that chalice by killing everything in the dungeon, or you can bribe guards, bribe creatures to get through doors that you would otherwise have to kill people. I mean, the Intellivision by this time was, it was old hat, but still on a system as relatively primitive, although I've read in the past few days that it was the first 16-bit system, so really was it that primitive, even by 1987 standards. And the graphics are incredible on this game. I mean, just looking at the screenshots. So you've got a kind of a three-part display where you've got the main action window, then you've got a separate window which shows a top-down map of the dungeon, and it, again, Fog of War, it maps as you go, and then a separate screen which shows your inventory. And the inventory can be used for all these different things. And the in-game graphics as well. I mean, if you I look at these things and I just can't help but compare it to what the 2600 looks like. And you can actually make stuff out in this game. So you can see that you're fighting. You can tell what it is. I mean, you'd be able to describe it. It's a lizard or it's an insect. And I think it looks incredible. It's got loads of depth, which is what I like. I think it will make for a great game club game. And whilst it may lack the originality of Chris's choice, I think what it may lack in originality, it may make up for, and I've not played either of them, but it may make up for in a bit of refinement, perhaps.
So that was Tower of Doom?
Tower of Doom.
Tower of Doom, yeah.
The very originally named Tower of Doom. What's your first choice, Matt?
So while you have gone arcade, adventure, something along those lines, RPG, not arcade,
action
adventure
RPG,
or RPG, I'm going all arcade with my choices. Nice. So my first choice is actually also a very, very late title. It's from 87 as well. And it was one I played and I couldn't stop playing when I was just checking stuff out on my mister here. So that is Diner, which is an unofficial sequel to the beautiful arcade game we played recently, Burger Time.
Yeah.
So this time the Rotten Foods, who they are, I don't know, they must be the monsters, have thrown the lunch all over the diner, and Peter Pepper has to get it back on the plate. And you get it back on the plate in this isometric 3D environment by running around and, well, kind of just kicking these balls. They're supposed to be meatballs and lettuce heads and rice and so on and so forth, but they are just colored balls. You have to kick them so they'll run to some other part of the screen, and if you kick them into monsters, you can kill the monsters. Actually, once when I was playing it just a few minutes ago, I kicked it once and hit all of the monsters at once. It was great gameplay experience there. But you have to kick the balls all the way down so they get back onto the plate, and you can clean up the diner. And once you've got all of the food balls down, you get it to the next level, of course. So very arcadey. It would be good for a high score challenge, and it's actually really great fun. So I thought that would be a perfect fit for the game club, also seeing as we just played Burger Time. So
nice choice.
Burger Time on the Intellivision is magnificent, by the way.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Yes, I played that as well. Mm. Unbelievable. Yeah. We want to see a machine sing. That's a game. Go. Mm. How did they do this?
In 5 months, that was coded as well, Burger Time, from scratch on the Intellivision. Amazing. Yeah. Dinah looks really pretty, though.
It is, and it's actually really playable as well. So, yeah.
Mm. And it's not, is it an Intellivision exclusive?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah.
It's only ever released, at least on Mobi Games, that's the only platform listed. So I think it is.
Yeah.
Someone had a bright idea, huh?
We do have an interesting mix of games. Some of them are exclusive, some of them are not. Vast majority of them are exclusive, which is good because, you know, console exclusives are the thing of the past, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much.
Almost.
I mean, consoles are a thing of the past, aren't they?
I think all three of us do play modern games. I mean, I'm playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey at the moment. Sorry, everyone. Sorry. But I am. And wow, what a game. Anyway, moving on.
So I don't play modern games, but that's only because I haven't been able to get my hands on a PS5 or a Series X because they're sold out always.
We are playing a game from, we are digressing, but we are playing a 2020 game, which I reckon 2020 is modern enough. Mm.
The Last of Us 2.
But you must tune in to playthrough.
Yes, exactly.
What we think of The Last of Us 2.
See what I mean? So there's the carrot.
It's good,
Chris,
isn't it?
Grabbed it. I'm good at this.
We're getting good.
As always, I've done this before. Anyway, I believe it's my turn to present. Now, this one's special. No one talks about this one, and it's wrong because they should. Now, one of my favorite publishers. It was a bit confusing back in the day of consoles in the second generation because they were one and the same, was Imagic. Mm. Not Imagine, not them, Imagic.
Mm.
And their boxes were bright silver.
Yeah.
And they had different color coding depending on what machine they were making for. So the Atari was bright red.
Yeah.
And the Intellivision was a deep water sort of blue, sky blue, Sega blue almost. And I believe green was for the G7000 or Odyssey 2. So this game, so I'm building up to a point, but the game is Whitewater. They did a lot of games, but this is one of my favourites. And I've got the overlay here, waving it around. It's a beautiful, beautiful game. Really colourful. One of the most colourful games I've ever seen on the Intellivision. Bright blues, bright greens, a very deep, dark red for... Well, the raft that you're floating in the river, because that's the point of the game. It's a river, very fast flowing river, sometimes, depending on what happens. The premise of the game is really, really weird. It's just so classic in television. Like, we don't know how to make games. Maybe this will work. Okay. And I don't know how they upsold this but it sold really well. It's one of those top selling games they made. The premise is this: you have three little men, and they're in a raft, a water, a dinghy, if you like, an inflatable dinghy, on a river in somewhere in the Amazon basin, and you're going up this river, and there's different modes of play. The most basic mode is to get from the start to the finish of the river within a set time, and that's fine. It's quite dull, but that teaches you how to row the raft. But that's not the core of the game. The core of the game is actually you then berthing your dinghy, and one of your men hops out of it and then goes into the jungle. When they go in, I'm not joking, it's dinghy. They go into the jungle, and then there's this big statue, and there's this series of flags, and another man, a native, right, and flags dotted around. And you have to then basically challenge this person to get to collect the flags in a certain order. These flags are in different places across the screen. And there's a big golden jug, beautiful, ornate golden jug. Like I said, the graphics in this are amazing. And okay, you have to sort of get the flags in a certain order. You get a flag, they get a flag. You get a flag, they get a flag. And you have to strategically tactically get the right flag in the right location so you end up closest to the jug at the end of it, and then you then at the end of that, once you've got all the flags, you then both of you go running for the jug. Whoever gets the jug first gets the jug. 1 point. Yay. And then you go running off. However, you can just cheat. You can't, I can't be bothered with the flag nonsense. I don't want any of this. And this is where the name of the game comes in. Because then you just grab the jug. Then all of a sudden these axes go flying over to you, these massive axes, and yeah. You know, they get really angry, and then you anger the water god, and you get into the, and all of a sudden the water, the river was relatively calm when you got there. It's this great raging sort of like, you know, white water, and it's animated again on the television because you can do it, and you see all this rolling, like, foaming water going up and down the stream, and you actually got to navigate up the stream then until you then go back to another beach up to another tribe, who then you then have to placate the angry water god by actually not cheating. Or you just cheat again, you just carry on going up the and the whole purpose of the game is you've got to do this 5 times, and the 5th time you get a big chest. And you've got to do it within a set, you know, you've got to get the best time, and there's lots of difficulty settings as well. It's magnificent. And your lives is represented by the number of people in your dinghy. So when you're going up the river...
Literally lives.
Yes. Literally, when you go up the river, they jump out, or they get knocked out of the dinghy and they get smashed against the rocks.
Mm. Wow.
And Chris, I'm sure I saw you stream this at some point, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
So is that still available? Do you still have an archive of all those old streams?
There is, yes, I'm sure. Mm. Yeah, there is.
Okay. So is it a single player? Is it a multiplayer only game?
No, single player.
Yeah, single player, okay.
Yeah. So this, I watched that stream back when you played that a couple years ago.
Yeah, I was trying to explain the game, and it's impossible.
That sounds amazing. That sounds really good.
Looks like great fun.
The overlay, I'm sorry for podcast everyone, but the overlay indicates how pretty it is. Look at it.
Mm. Yeah.
That's how vibrant it is.
Yeah, and it's lots of nice colours.
What's lovely about this game is it doesn't need the number pad at all.
Okay.
At all.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Just needs the fire buttons and the directions, because you've got to steer that boat. Good luck with that.
Here, Chris, you need to give us a steer with one of your games, because the way you sold those two, it's going to be impossible for us to get rid of
one. It's going to be really hard.
So there you go.
We normally throw in one so it's a dead fish so we can just knock it straight out.
Sorry, mate. I just love that game. I love it. I don't know why, because it's not a fantastic game, but it's just
great.
Freaking bonkers. Like, how did they up? They spent a lot of time and effort making that game and putting it out there. Way more than they do in the system. Someone needs to make an update.
What I think sounds great is, but it's a game that would never be made now, or not in commercial kind of sphere anyway.
No. Someone needs to update it. Someone needs to make it again.
Sound really good.
Beautiful.
Right.
Brilliant choice. Let's get the next one from you, Chris.
Follow that, Worthington.
Yes.
So I've actually chosen a very famous game, or I suspect it'll be famous for anybody who knows anything about the history of the medium. So anyone who's listened to me on podcast will know that I love the historical side of retro gaming. I love finding where things began. And the Intellivision is home to one of the founding fathers of a genre, perhaps, with a game called Utopia, which was released in 1982. Now, I won't make any bold claims because I don't know for sure, but from what I've read, it was designed by a guy called Don Daglow. And from what I read and from what I know, this is one of the first city builders / god games. I've never played it, but from what I've read of it, it's basic. So it kind of SimCity and Civilization and all the games that follow kind of stood on the shoulders of this giant and did a lot more with the genre than this ever could. You build stuff, you collect resources, you have to fish a lot, and then you have natural disasters, random events will come along and they could destroy buildings and they can wipe out your population, and then you have to restart and grow again. It's not the prettiest looking game. I warn people now, in the games that particularly, I think, well, and you, Mads, the games that we've mentioned so far are all very good looking games for what many people may think is a primitive system. This isn't necessarily what one of them. It's not a pretty, it's very blocky, but doesn't need to be. It's a strategy game. And it's one of the first real-time strategy games ever made. My only downside, and I often do this, the only downside with this is that it is multiplayer only. Now, I almost didn't put this on my list because of that. It doesn't have an AI opponent, but you can play the game by just with the second player just is inactive. You just skip the second player's turn if you don't have another human being to play with. And then you can just focus on getting a high score on your own island. I would love to play this game because I think historically it's really important, and I think we could have a really good conversation about what it does, what it doesn't do, what other games did afterwards.
Yeah.
I have to say myself, my only reservation for a month is perhaps if you don't have somebody else to play with, perhaps it doesn't have the depth just to concentrate on building up your island and striving for the higher score. But certainly as a historical piece, I think there's not many more important in television games.
Yeah, and Don Daglove is an interesting character. Quick shout out to Carl from Video Game Newsroom Time Machine, who did a two-part interview with Don.
Did he?
A year or two ago. A year ago, I guess. So he did a two-part interview with Don Daglove talking about his entire career. And I mean, he started making games on the PDP-10s back in the 70s and have been doing it forever. And he's a really interesting guy. Actually, if you do speak Spanish, I'm sure Carl recently released an interview with him that he did on Spanish instead, because both Carl and Don do speak Spanish, and they thought it would be fun to do it in Spanish as well. So, but I haven't listened to that because I don't understand a word of Spanish.
He went on to work at EA, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, he worked at EA and worked at Brodabond for many years as well. Helped produce Prince of Persia, and he's done a lot of interesting stuff.
Before EA turned into podcast. What it is now.
Yes.
When EA was actually...
Very strange to listeners, what I'm about to say, but this was my Street Fighter 2 game.
Was it?
Because my friends used to play this. This is the game we used to play because when I was in my early teens, because I'm quite old, that's the game we would play, is Utopia. We were really, really brutal at it, and we knew vicious things to do. For example, I'll tell you this one. There's something called the PT boat. PT boats used to kill the pirates that come out as you kill your, that attack your fishing boats. It's got layers. This game's got layers. Yeah. Okay, it's very complex. It's basically Civ. What you do is you park your PT boat on your opponent's harbor. That way, every time they try to make a boat, it'd die immediately. That's what you do. You just, the first thing you do, as soon as you get to make your PT boat, you immediately squeeze over and
damn
it.
So you do rebellions, or you actually trigger rebellions in the other island, and then appear in unprotected spaces, and it's just way ahead of it. We really knew that game.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't realize it at the time, because we didn't, you know, it was before then, but we were playing, similar to people who were playing, you know, Warcraft or Civilization multiplayer, or, you know, we were doing that only in 1982, not, you know.
Well, what about playing
our game?
What about playing it individually? Do you think there's enough there?
No.
That is my concern.
Sorry for being so blunt with you.
I prefer it. Well, look, we've got some good games here. Yeah. You know, there's only three of them that can make a shortlist, so I'd rather
It's a wonderful study. It's a wonderful study, and certainly something. But to last for the game club, I do not think it's appropriate.
No. Okay, well, that's fair enough. I would rather we just...
But I think it's worth Street Fighter 2 game. There you go.
It's certainly worth a mention. And maybe we could do some early, you know, early kind of... City Builders, Mads, as a, you know, as an episode in itself, and have a look at it. In
that'd be
sense.
Interesting.
What's the deal with SimCity? Really,
it's I don't know whether you can call it a remake, but it is getting a tart up for the Amico. Nice.
Right.
Okay.
Whether that might introduce some kind of element of single player gaming, I don't know, and I don't know to what extent that tart up. Cloudy Mountain is also getting a tart up, Chris.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Interesting. So,
Mads,
you two guys with your big brains, you pick your clever games, and I'm going to continue with my arcade games here. So, thinking of having to record with you guys, I picked a game called Beauty and the Beast. You get to choose who wears which moniker.
I'll be Amber.
Yes. So this was released in 1982, so an earlier game here. It's pretty much an Intellivision version of a riff on Donkey Kong, isn't it? Oh, you have it, Chris, I see. Mm. So I played it earlier today and I really enjoyed it. It's weird because it seems as if you're climbing up windows that are opening. You can't climb up closed windows for some reason, but as soon as a window opens, you can climb up the building to the next floor using those windows. But you need to climb up to the big monkey he's called Horrible Hank, by the way, who's got your girlfriend, which is a blue stick figure. And you need to climb up and reach her, of course. And there are four floors on each level you need to traverse while avoiding the stuff that he throws down at you. And it just seems like such great arcadey fun. And I had a great 5 minutes just playing around with it earlier today. So I thought that would be a fun game to play. And it's also a game that I've been looking, because I don't know enough about the Intellivision myself, so I've been Googling around trying to find out which games people think are the best games on the Intellivision. And this was on a couple of those lists I found. Yeah. So, and of course, every time you reach Horrible Hank, he'll just grab your girlfriend, go up four more floors. So yeah. I'm guessing it'll be a long, long climb before you actually save her. And knowing our listeners, Pix will get there, but yeah. The rest of us won't.
So. Pix will get there by midday on the 1st of January.
Yes.
It's a very pretty game.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Very bright, isn't it? I mean, it's the thing about the Intellivision games. They really push the luminance of everything. A lot of the colours just pops out of the screen. Incredible. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely incredible.
There was a port of Donkey Kong on the Intellivision, wasn't there, as well?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
is it good?
And Donkey Kong Jr. as well.
Yeah, it's which not is supposed up there to, right, with the ColecoVision, but that's obvious. Yeah. I think it was CBS who actually did the port to the Intellivision. So there was some argument that they may have deliberately kind of nerfed it. But no, definitely did. They did a good job.
Yeah.
Unlike Zaxxon, we don't want to talk about that.
I actually played that as well. I thought, maybe I'll choose Zaxxon. No.
I don't like the arcade game. Never mind its ports.
No. Oh. Yeah, well. I think it's a really, really good choice. Solid choice. I remember playing it back in the day. I had it. Had that and Tropical Trouble. I would mix the two games together.
Yeah.
Very different games, but they came out more or less at the same time. Again, both are Magic games. The second showing of a Magic. They really knew what they were doing. They could make the Intellivision sing.
And this was a platform exclusive again. So.
Mm.
And they laugh in the face of copyright.
They did.
Who cared in 1982, right? It just didn't matter.
Well, yeah, you'd be surprised. But yeah,
would be surprised.
Yes.
So, Chris, final one from you.
Yes. The first ever Intellivision game I played, and one of the earliest video games I ever played. Not the earliest, that is still reserved as Pong. Generally, it is Pong. It's the first game I ever played. Great Yarmouth, 1977. Anyway, Shark. This is a very famous Intellivision game. In fact, 9 times out of 10, in fact, all of them, every Intellivision emulation collection will feature this game. And I remember speaking to a friend very recently about this, the same friend I met almost 40 years ago when he showed me the Intellivision for the first time. He said, "You've got to play Shark." And he was smiling and very giddy about it. I went, okay, it sounds really lame, but okay. So the game is you are a little fish, teeny tiny little fish floating around in the ocean. And the idea is you have to eat other fish to get bigger. Fantastic. How hard can that be? Well, unfortunately, there's also this massive black shark that's roving the seas as well. And it appears, with this big sort of like groan, like... And it's, again, in television, lots of really awesome sounds, amazing sound chip in that machine. And it's roving around, and you have to either avoid it or kill it. And you can kill it by actually eating its tail. You nibble away at its tail, but as soon as you do so, it flips around, and then you have to swim away. And the way to kill a shark in Shark is you basically do a rotation, the circle of motion. So you eat its tail, it flips around, and you go up. And you need to tell again because it's just flipped round. Mm. And you keep doing that, and then it sinks to the bottom. And then, you know, and it's like, oh, I'm dead. And then you get loads of points and you go, yay, I feel awesome. And then you get eaten by another fish is slightly bigger than you, which is fairly. But this game is on the Evercade Internet and Television Collection.
Mm.
It's on. It's everywhere. If you, you know, any, it's just so popular. It doesn't need D-pad to really control it that much, or number pad really. There is some need to do darting motions, like you go a little bit fast, and you've got three of those. Just looking at the overlay here, there's three darts that you can actually go. And use those up every so often. But fantastic game. All sorts of things happen the longer you last.
Yeah.
It's one of those games, like, it seems a bit dull. Oh, initially it's quite play, but then all of a sudden jellyfish start appearing, and then squids and all sorts of other beasties and things that are difficult to navigate around, and they're all bigger than you, so you've got to not die. Shark's an absolute work of genius. Beautiful game, in that it's just so elegant in its design and so simple, and yet this game screams Game Club, because you can get a high score. You can find yourself in a rhythm going, I've got this. Oh, no, come on. That wasn't fair. And it's not about, again, it's one of the, really early game.
Yeah.
82, I think.
Yeah.
Really early game, but it's still always your fault when you screw up. Always. Yeah. It's not unfair. It's you that push the boundaries of risk, not the game. So it doesn't paint you in a corner. You did.
And it was designed by our friend Don Daglow.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, it looks really good. It's a fantastic game. And I'm really, really happy that it was on the Evercade collection, because it's a shoe-in.
It was one of the first games shown off in the early Amico footage, wasn't it? The tart-up of Shark Shark was one of the one of the kind of premier games that they showed off.
It's and it's got two exclamation points in it. It's not many games with exclamation points.
It's two of them.
Regular Crikey. Listeners of the podcast will know there used to be a quiz
by
Paul Davies about
that,
which games had exclamation points.
It's got two.
Shark's got two of them. Shark's got two of them.
I think so I might be right in saying as well that this is not one of the cheapest games. I had a quick look at this, and I think this one is, I could be wrong, but I'm sure when I checked on eBay, this is kind of upwards of £50 to pick this up.
Nice. Okay. Interesting.
Yet another great choice.
Thank you. You're welcome. It's almost as if I know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's going to be a problem, isn't it? Getting rid of O'Regan's games are going to be tough.
Yep.
So I'll bring home my three with, again, there's some nice similarities here between our lists, Chris, because this is the first video game I ever remember playing. It was a game that my brothers got with their Intellivision. I didn't have a clue what was going on. And having not really spent any great amount of time with it since, I still don't really have a clue what's going on with it, but I really enjoy it. It's an arcade port, the only one on our long list. It's Q-Bert, the Gottlieb & Co. arcade game from 1983. It got, I think the Intellivision version released in 1983. I'm not sure when the arcade version was circulated.
Not that soon before, I don't think. Maybe
81.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
82,
quite a colourful game. So I don't think, it wouldn't be in the 70s, I don't think.
It looks wonderful on the Intellivision, I think. Mm-hmm. I think the graphics still look really nice now. It controls, again, I'm talking about a very hazy memory, and from what I've read about the way it moves around, I imagine it moves around very nicely using an Intellivision controller. I can't imagine that it is difficult to reproduce. I did have a look at the manual. You can get the manual online for this, and the controls seemed simple enough. And I did think I needed to have one arcade game on my list. Q-Bert will be a great high score chaser for the Game Club. I shan't say any more about it, because I suspect most people will know of and about Q-Bert.
So Q-Bert is one of those classic arcade games where you can really get into the zone and just rack up those insanely high scores, because it's all about the timing and following his jump speed around there. It's a great game.
You can imagine what foul things are coming out of his mouth when he expletes.
And you need to imagine it because it just
you
says,
yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
He says two words, doesn't he? I think he says like hello at the start and goodbye at the end. But it's just complete gibberish.
There's three things about Q-Bert for me, if I may, on a personal view and also on an opinion view, is that the Q-Bert comes on a massive cartridge. It's huge. It's like maybe half a bit longer than the other. So I don't know if there's more gain there. I don't know.
Yeah, why? That's curious.
It's massive. It's by Parker Brothers, who were a publisher and developer back in the day. I'm not sure what happened, but they made some fantastic games. Yeah. I've got all of the Parker Brothers games on the Intellivision, I'm happy to say. And bar none of them, they're just quality titles. And I include Popeye. Yeah. I know. It's a good game. Yeah. But the Empire Strikes Back is amazing. But not here to talk about that. Q-Bert. What's the second thing about Q-Bert is you can tell what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks great. Still looks good now.
You can see the snake when it appears. You see the little green dude with the little sunglasses. He's wearing sunglasses. Yeah. That's another thing about the television that really freaked me out when I first saw it was how the sprites have multicolours on them. Now, you've got to understand, everyone, that this is a second-generation console. This is quite rare. You know, yes, Pitfall had it, but most of the time sprites were made up of a single colour. But in television, it's very common for sprites to have multiple colours. And that's what really struck me about it. But I think, and finally, just the sheer immediacy of it and the fluidity of play and how it's so attuned to the disc, which you then land on a disc, because the way you actually score points is killing the monsters.
That's right.
And the only way to do that is to jump on a disc just at the right moment when they're leaping towards you.
Yeah.
And there's a big snake, sort of spiral snake that goes after you. Just as it reaches you, you then leap off onto a disc. And it's a really, really good port. Good shout, Chris. But my only worry is that it still doesn't compare to the original, which is quite easy to actually get hold of play. So that's my only worry.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't include Burger Time, for example, because it's great, but you can play the original.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
So speaking of Parker Brothers, I've got another arcade port from them as well. So my final choice is Super Cobra. So a side-scrolling shooter based on the arcade game, of course, where you're flying in a chopper, you're shooting projectiles straight ahead, and you're dropping bombs that fall at an angle. So trying to get through those obstacle courses, as it really is, isn't it, in this side-scrolling shooter. It's a game I've played a lot on other platforms, and playing it today on the Intellivision, it just sparked all those good old memories. So it looks great there. It sounds good. It's really playable and good for a high school challenge as well. So a simple arcade port, but it seems to be a good one.
Clips along at a good old pace. Scrolling's pretty good as well.
Yes, it does.
I've actually played on the G7000.
Yeah?
It doesn't scroll.
Okay.
It's a flip screen. Yeah.
Really?
It's a flip screen, yeah.
Oh, seriously?
So it's a bit like Airwolf, not as impossibly difficult, but yeah. They did a really good job, considering the limitations they had on the platform, but yeah, they couldn't make it scroll. No way you're going to get the whole screen scrolling. But the Intellivision port of Super Cobra is a fine example of a scramble like game, which is ultimately what it is, only in a helicopter. Good shout. Another again, Parker Brothers game. Awesome.
Yes.
Early Konami game as well, was it? Yes. The original.
Mm.
Yes,
I mean, remember when Konami used to make video games?
Please don't.
What a time to be alive.
I know. Yeah, as opposed to pachinko machines. Anyway.
Mm. Exactly. So there we go, guys. Wow.
Yeah, we have our list. And before we get back into selecting which games we actually want to put forward, let's just have a tiny break.
Are you troubled by strange loading noises in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of hope and nostalgia whenever you see the blurry pixels on a CRT?
Have you or any of your family played a C64, Spectrum, or CPC?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Just pick up your phone and listen to the professionals.
Retro Asylum.
A remarkable and substantial back catalogue is available 24 hours a day to serve all your nostalgic needs.
We're ready to remind you.
So we're back from the break, and we're ready to eliminate some games here. Chris, can you just remind us what are your three games?
My three games are Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Cloudy Mountain. See, it's got colon. So there you go. See?
Mm. Yeah.
Still way ahead of its time. A game with a colon in it. Whitewater and Shark Shark.
It's Shark Shark.
Shark Shark. There you go.
Exactly. And Chris?
I've got Tower of Doom, the wonderfully entitled Tower of Doom. I have Cubert and I have Utopia.
And my three games were Diner and Super Cobra and Beauty and the Beast. So, Chris O, since you are the guest, you'll get to pick off one of mine and one of the other Chris's games first. So just choose whichever game you think is not appropriate for the game club or just not as interesting to you. Just whichever you want, of course. So,
Mads, I'm going to go with you first. And that's, oh, what a trio. they're all really strong. And I'm gonna say Super Cobra because it is a port.
Okay.
That's my only reason. It's pretty weak, but they're all really strong. So well done. You're definitely Game Club games. Good stuff. But yeah, I'm going to say Super Cobra is going to have to go. Great as it is. And on a similar vein, as you know, I'm going to have to get rid of Utopia for the reasons I gave earlier.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mads.
So we're already down to two, Chris. That was quick.
Yeah. Go on. You go next.
No, you're next.
Why? No, but why do I always have to go next?
I can go next. No worries.
No, let me go next, actually. Let me go next, because I want you to have the difficult decision. Let me go next.
Thanks.
Okay, so I'm going to start both your selections, Chris. Great, great trio. Mads, you've got two very strong games. So you've got Beauty and the Beast and Diner. Now, Diner almost made my list, and the reason I didn't put it on the list is because we played Burger Time so recently, but maybe you're right. Maybe the fact that we played Burger Time so recently is a good reason to play Diner, because we can compare and contrast, and it does look very, very playable.
Mm.
Beauty and the Beast also looked really good. I watched some videos, I read some articles, and Beauty and the Beast did look good. I suppose my only reservation with Beauty and the Beast is, are there any variations in the level types, like on Donkey Kong, where you have, you know, the factory level and the elevators and whatnot? Or is it literally just climbing up the building each time?
I actually don't know, but how about you, Chris? Do you know?
It just keeps going. It gets more and more difficult, and the windows start opening. It just gets hard, and then to eventually get to the end, and you knock them off the building, and then rinse and repeat.
Okay.
Okay.
So no completely different level types, but...
No.
Yes, no. Okay.
So... Okay, well, that's made my mind up then. I am going to eliminate Beauty and the Beast, and I'm going to go for Diner. And Beauty and the Beast looks great, and it looks very playable. And my only reservation with that is that just continuously climbing the building might just get, well, will get very samey. Now, Diner, I know, is the same concept, but on increasingly difficult levels. I just think it looks like there's more depth to Diner, and it looks like it could be a great high score challenge. So, yeah. I will eliminate Beauty and the Beast, and I will put forward Diner to the shortlist.
Yeah, so we already have one game on the shortlist, and I'm actually very happy that it was Diner that went through. So great good choices.
Now, Chris, crikey. This is a really difficult one. So you have Whitewater, Shark,
yeah,
and Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, all of which...
Colon Cloudy Mountain.
Colon Cloudy Mountain. Let's not forget. Now, I want to give Mads a difficult decision with my two. So I am going to eliminate... I can't get rid of Whitewater, because that is just sounds completely, completely crazy. And I think it's one that I don't feel like an... I'm going to go with Shark Shark. I'm going to eliminate Shark Shark. I've never played Shark Shark, and it looks like a great game. But of the two, of the three, that is the one I feel drawn to the least. So I will eliminate Shark Shark.
So you've given me an impossible choice here.
I like to do that.
So let's start with Chris version 2's games then, because that's going to be easier. You've got Qbert and Tower of Doom left. I'm actually thinking, even though the Qbert port is probably really good, I would prefer playing the arcade version there. So I'm gonna eliminate Qbert and keep Tower of Doom on the list. And then I get to the original Chris, the real Chris, his list of games.
I'll be Christopher. That's all
right. Yeah, sure. Christopher. I've got Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, Cloudy Mountain, and White Water. And that is so tough because I was really sold on the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons Cloudy Mountain because of your description of all of the things that it did with the fog of war and randomly generated levels and everything.
But my game does all that, and it's got 6 years worth of
behind. But let me finish here. I remember watching Chris stream Whitewater, and I remember how much he laughed during that stream. I mean, he was really having fun. So I want to experience that myself. So it's going to have to be Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, Cloudy Mountain has to go because I want to play Whitewater. So that's gonna make the list. So we have a list. We have Whitewater. We have the Tower of Doom. And we have Diner. That's a strong list.
It is a strong list. Mm. And I think my only concern about Whitewater is... how are you going to compete? Because it's basically, you'd have to say, we're going to have to play this one mode. Like you play game 7, for example, which would be the intermediate or sort of normal level of the ritual where you have to go up the river and actually get the treasures. Mode 8 is just extreme version of that, which is not impossible. But that's like going to be settled in details when the game club is for this game is launched. Yes. That's my only concern.
Okay.
How are you going to do that with Tower of Doom or like competitive aspect of that? I don't know. Figure something out. But again, you know, but Diner's sort of straightforward as a score chaser.
There's a score, so yeah.
We don't always have to compete, and really now it's up to those who will vote to decide whether they want a game on which we can compete or not.
But yeah,
so Chris is only saying that we don't have to compete because you know he's lost this month because I beat him in Sensei, didn't I? Chris?
There you go.
One game, and you crashed your emulator because you knew I was going to equalise. We all know.
At the 89th minute, the emulator crashed.
Did he curve the ball in?
I hit the crossbar about 6 times, and I was.
But you're not supposed to hit the crossbar. I mean, Max, you're supposed to get it into the goal.
It's just ping pong, the football game. That's all it is.
It was good fun, but I would have equalised.
I'm really ecstatic that Walter made the cut. I really am, because it is, when you describe it to people, like, you're lying. This game doesn't exist. You're lying, and then you so just to help you out, I'll share the link with my video of me doing that, playing, streaming it. Yeah, and I'll do it after, you know, so you can actually put that in the show notes and stuff and people can read and watch me gaggle and chuckle about this ridiculous game, which has a little yellow man jumping out of a little red raft.
Our challenge is now to get this episode out quickly because it's the 29th of December and our television month starts in 48 hours. So, or just a little more. So Dean is going to feel the pressure to produce a cover, and we will get this edited just as quickly as we can, and get it pushed out. And we'll have a very swift turnaround on the vote.
May I offer some honourable mentions?
Yeah, yes, please do. Indeed.
Space Battle, really bland.
I've got that one
title, but this game has depth. It has the radar. It opens up a weird grey, a bland green radar screen with you in the middle of it and lots of little fleets of alien ships flying towards you. And you have to send out squadrons of ships against these ships. And then you go into the cockpit of one of those ships and you shoot all these aliens down. And it's just amazing. And they've got a little overlay here showing the different squadrons you command. You can send them back to base, and you can. It's just really fantastic game. I was playing it earlier just before we started recording. Wonderful stuff. Almost made the cut, but I decided no, it doesn't have quite enough depth, or what? It's just too fiddly. It needs a lot of the keypad to work.
Yeah.
So too, yeah, fiddly. Then there's Treasures of Tarmin, which AD&D is the second D&D game.
Yeah.
That's basically wizardry.
Mm.
So they put wizardry into the really old computer RPG, CRPG.
Yep. Yeah.
That's and then there's Trucking. That's basically Euro Truck Simulator, circa 1982. Yeah. I'm not joking. Mm. It's genuinely, again, ahead of the time. B-17 Bomber.
Yeah. Mm.
That's the
voice module.
Needs the voice module, which is why it wasn't included, because I thought we wouldn't be able to emulate. I think you can emulate that.
Yeah,
but it's a fantastic game. Really, really good. And it is you controlling a B-17 bomber during the Second World War, bombing northern France and Holland, what have you. And Snafu, basically Snake.
Snake, yeah.
Yep. In 1982. See what I mean? This is the 20 years before Snake, there was Snafu. And has a special place in Retro Asylum's heart because we ran it twice at the Super Game Test at EGX when they did events for, you know, podcasts and things. That was really fun. And then finally, Auto Racing.
Yeah. Mm.
Micro Machines in 1982.
Yes.
So these all are fantastic games. Auto Racing, I was very tempted to include again, but it's more of a multiplayer game, so it's like, maybe not.
Mm.
I've got a couple of things just to mention very quickly as well. Frog Bog,
which is
on the Evercade collection. If you want an example of a very pretty static image on the television, have a look at Frog Bog, it looks beautiful, absolutely beautiful, this thing.
So I was playing that earlier on. Is there anything to it apart from jumping from lily pad to lily pad and eating the fireflies?
Eating flies before the sun goes down. Before the sun goes down.
But when that sun goes down, man, does that look good.
That's good.
That's true.
And the other one was He-Man, which I completely discounted He-Man, the Masters of the Universe, just being as a terrible, terrible tie-in. But actually, having watched some best in television games videos on YouTube, it features quite a lot. It looks like it's a bit of a two-in-one kind of arcade-style shooter and then on the ground kind of runny lefty-righty thing, as Chris would say. Look really good. But I'd already decided my list by that point and didn't want to reopen it. Maybe I should have had that rather than Utopia in hindsight. I probably should have done, but there we go.
Got a strong list, so it's all good, mate. All good.
So, gents, there we have it.
Yes.
Tower of Doom, Whitewater, and...
Diner. Yes.
Well done. Thanks, Mads. Mm. They're the three. They will go forward to the vote as soon as we can, and then we three will reconvene towards the end of January to talk more in television.
Yes. Look forward to it.
That'll be good.
Mm.
That'll be really good fun.
Any shout-outs before we go, Matt?
Any shout-outs? Shout-out to all of the other content creators here at the end of the year. There are so many podcasts that have carried us through yet another year of Corona. So not going to mention any names. You know all of the different gaming and retro gaming podcasts I usually listen to. So just shout-outs to content creators keeping us sane through all of this.
Yeah. And Chris, we'll give you more opportunity to broadcast what you're up to currently, if people don't know, but very briefly, if people can't wait another month to listen to your dulcet tones, where can people find you?
If you go to canorinse.com, or one word, and that's rinse with an S, by the way, most people put it. CaneAndRinse.com, and you'll find my podcast there, The Sausage Factory, where I interview video game developers about them and the games they make. That's current games, I'm afraid. Although we do have featured games made on older platforms in the past. So.
Mm.
But nonetheless, it is current, very, very current games. And that's been going for 8 years now. And then, of course, I'm also a host on the main show, as we call it, Kena Rinse itself. So yeah.
And you've just celebrated, or Kena Rinse has just celebrated its very landmark 500th episode.
Issue
500, yes. volume 43,000, yeah. Issue 500. Now,
that's right, yeah.
It's an incredible achievement. I mean, just like us. I mean, I think they started almost at the same time as Retro Asylum back in 2011.
Yeah, although as we know, we at Kena Rinse still don't recognise Retro, because video games are video games.
No, the classic old, video games. Old they are. Although Leon does slip up occasionally, and he does use the R word occasionally. I know
this. He does. We're keeping an eye on him. But I was on that episode, actually.
You were?
On my favourite game of 2019, Outer Wilds.
I've still not played that.
For shame, sir. No. Sorry. For shame. Magnificent. Yeah. Magnificent game.
It's one that we must tackle. It's a possibility for a playthrough tackler, Mads, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. If you like Newtonian physics, then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, highly recommended, both the Sausage Factory and the main Kena Rinse podcast, and anything else that features at the moment. That are, I think the Kena Rinse stable, the umbrella, is a little light because of a couple of podcasts on hiatus, but the Sausage Factory and the main Kena Rinse podcast are superb, as we often shout out here on Retro Asylum.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, have a wonderful end of 2021 and a very pleasant new year, and restful, hopefully, whatever you choose to do. Hope our listeners stay safe, and we'll be back very early in 2022 to talk about a wonderful Intellivision game.
And I hope you enjoy the rest of your birthday, Chris.
Yes.
Thank you.
Many happy returns, Chris.
Cheers.
Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime.